This show was first broadcast on Free FM 89.0, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access radio station. For more information on our station and our wide range of programs, visit freefm.org.nz. Podcasting. It's easier than you think, and Free FM has everything you need, from help with initial planning right through to hosting and delivery across popular podcast platforms. Our content creators are just ordinary people delivering engaging weekly podcasts and radio shows on all sorts of issues that affect them, their communities, and our society. We're really keen to support new content by, for, and about a wide range of community groups and issues. Interested? Go to freefm.org.nz or see our Facebook page to find out more.
Kia ora, welcome to Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0. Holly Snape here from Community Waikato, and I'm joined by a Naki boy, actually from Australia originally, we'll get to that, but but from Taranaki we've got Leighton Littlewood, currently the coordinator, national coordinator of New Zealand Mentoring Foundation. New Zealand Mentoring Foundation New Zealand.
Yes,
that's the right way around, eh?
It's a bit like, that's the right way around. Not sure that matters, but...
Look, quite a new organisation too, really.
Yep, officially really only been around about 2 years. Probably haven't really done 2 full years of official operation yet, but we've been running programs for the last 2 years.
And it's really important programs that you're doing. This is really growing strength and connections within the not-for-profit sector.
Yeah, essentially that's exactly what it is. Our focus is around capability, so it is about strengthening leadership within the community sector, and we do that through mentoring because we believe in the power of connection. And so that's, you know, one-on-one connection between a mentor and a mentee, but also drive strong connections across everybody involved in the program.
Cool. Let's roll back a little bit. So you've come from Australia. How old were you when you moved to New Zealand?
23.
Oh, yeah. So that explains why you're not too twangy or anything.
No, I come from Adelaide, so Adelaide has a much more refined accent.
Yeah.
That's about all that's refined about people from Adelaide, but yeah.
I hear it's beautiful, though, Adelaide.
It is, and it's designed by the same designer as Christchurch, you may or may not know.
I did not know
that. So there's quite similarities in the city.
Yeah, that makes some sense then. What brought you to New Zealand?
My ex.
Your ex-wife, yeah?
Yep. So, yeah, she's from New Plymouth. We met and got married over there, and came over here in 93, and once we kind of had kids here, we just kind of stayed.
Yeah.
And to be honest, New Zealand's a hard place to leave.
I have to agree with you there.
Yeah.
Did you have, I mean, you're only 23 at the time, were you involved in community when you left, or were you in quite a different sort of space?
I grew up in a church, so I always had some connection in that space.
Yes.
My parents, particularly my mother, was, you know, really involved with church stuff, traditional church stuff, you know, giving clothes and food and stuff to community and you name it. So, and she never actually had a proper job. I remember as a kid always growing up, you know, getting, before I went to school, always just hanging around with mum and going to all these different places, you know, the op shop that she was, you know, part of staffing and that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
So, but when I was 23, yeah, I was probably in a bit of a hiatus, I suppose. A bit more obsessed with myself and sport, I think.
Fairly common for a 23-year-old,
yep.
Eh? Yeah. But so you came to New Zealand, married man, a married man at that point.
Yes. I was married very young, yep.
Yeah, you were, weren't you?
Yep. Didn't have kids till later, so it wasn't one of those situations.
Yeah. Well,
not that there's anything wrong with that.
I was going to say, I wouldn't have judged anyway.
No.
So that's cool. So at what point did you, because you've had a bit of a journey through your roles in community as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I guess I pretty quickly connected with the church here in Taranaki then. And got involved in youth stuff. And my journey from there really was, well, I was sort of working a lot of casual work and started up our own sort of graphic design business. I was really heavily involved in church stuff. And it kind of just grew from there. Within the church, I got some opportunities to do some outdoor education training, and then ended up working at a Christian camp for 2 years. And at that point, I just came to an age or something where I felt like I needed to do a bit of study, so I went and did a degree in history and politics. I was about 30 then.
Yeah.
been, I've already had about 3 uncompleted degrees from other universities in Australia, but I thought by the time I'm 30, maybe I'm grown up enough to achieve something.
And you obviously did.
I did, yeah.
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 And is that what took you then into, because you got into local government?
Yeah, after that, moved to Taranaki. My wife got a job at the regional council there. And to be honest, the job just came up in housing for the elderly at the local council in New Plymouth. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. I studied history. I don't know if that was related to the elderly stuff, but I got to learn a lot more about history. And I essentially became the manager for the housing for the elderly, which is quite a fun job, to be honest. You know, managing housing and rent and stuff is not that much fun, but I had this really amazing part of the job where every 6 weeks I had to go and check on all the tenants. And there was 156 tenants. And so for a whole week, all I would do was drive around
and talk
north,
to people.
North Taranaki. And chat to old people. I drank so many cups of teas and ate so many chocolate biscuits. It wasn't very healthy for me, but it was amazing. It was truly amazing.
That actually sounds incredible.
Yeah, the people were just extraordinary.
And also, why were you checking on them? Why did you go and see them?
Like it was a social.
So it was.
It was a connection thing. It was acknowledging that we delivered a service, which was a housing service, but in actual fact that people at that age are often quite disconnected because they're, you know, it's harder for them to get out of their homes. And it's set within a community development team for that reason, that it was a community development service. It wasn't actually a housing service. And so that role was literally, you know, a strong part of that role was actually their health and well-being. So I would, you know, it was much easier to sort of keep track of them when you knew them and you're checking on them regularly. So I was talking to them, the neighbours, you know, so it was much more aware of what was going on in all those little communities around northern Taranaki.
So, you know, this is so different from our community because our council sold off all of our pensioner housing stock. You know, like, it was actually a devastating time for us in community. There was a strong pushback from the sector arguing that actually the social housing is a responsibility of government and local territorial authorities and not something a community sector or a private sector can resolve.
Yeah,
you know, and so it's amazing to hear it was even located not even within the facilities part of the council, but community development.
Ironically, now I think it is located within the properties part. But
keep an eye on it because you don't want the same process that happened. You know, like I think that withdrawal in itself has some of.
Yeah, it was interesting. We actually did I can't remember what year it was, but New Plymouth District Council did put that out to consultation with one of the long-term plan sort of consultation processes to actually sell them, you know, to sort of, and that same argument about, oh, you know, well, why are we competing with the private sector, blah, blah, you know, and maybe we should put our energy into supporting social services that can do it, but you don't, do you? That's the truth. They don't. It doesn't happen that way. It's like I always say, you know, if I earn more money, I can give more money to charity, but I don't.
Yeah.
So I'm better off finding better other, you know, so volunteer time and stuff as well.
Yeah.
And thankfully for New Plymouth, they didn't go down that track, but it was a really powerful and interesting process. You know, quite painful even for the tenants to even have the process going.
Oh, yeah, understanding that conversation's happening and the, I can imagine the turmoil, the fear people feel that they could potentially be losing their homes. You know, we have tenants that were living in those places, you know, some for 20, 30 years.
Yeah,
you know?
And even the guarantees that any new buyer would keep them, but you know, it's not, you know what, how it rolls. We all know how it rolls.
Exactly.
But just the question creates a lot of anxiety, and it wasn't a fun process to be part of, to be honest.
Yeah. To be fair, I think there are some on council who still hold regrets about that decision. Doesn't bring the houses back.
No, it's too late now. Once they're gone, you're not buying them back, are you?
No, certainly not. So, you know, I can't imagine, So that sounded like a fascinating job. How long were you there for?
I was only 2 years in that job.
Yeah.
And then I left council and got a job at Housing New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
I only lasted 4 months. And I probably shouldn't go into too many details. It was a cultural thing that I just did not, it just did not sit well with me. I just knew I couldn't be a healthy version of myself and do the role in the way that reflected the culture of that place. So I left without a job.
Oh, good on you, though.
Four months of leaving.
That's a bold decision. It's courageous.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the right one.
Now in my life.
Yeah?
And I haven't regretted it yet.
Good. That is good. So so what did you do after that?
So then eventually, 4 months later, I actually ended up, when I was right on the verge of thinking all hope was lost. I got a phone call from the council that I used to work for in the same team, just to do some fill-in work as a community development advisor. And that kind of just rolled on from there. So I ended up getting a job permanently. I spent 5 years in that role and did a lot of worked a lot with the aging sector then as well. And then ended up managing the same team for another 5 years.
So, yeah, long time in local government.
Like, yeah, 12 years. Yeah. Which is quite a long
like
time.
Like a prison sentence for murder, actually.
Like it. Yeah.
It's a big one.
You do, yeah. Well, unfortunately, I realised I did have the power to leave.
Yeah.
Unlike a prison.
But I suppose, you know, in a role like that, you're also having a pretty significant, you're making a significant contribution to well-being of a community.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're interesting roles working for any government, I think. And I do. I used to sort of constantly be sitting in that space trying to factor in, you know, is this a good use of my time? Because it can be frustrating. There's bureaucracy there. And, you know, I always felt like, you know, I was always serving like three masters, particularly in community development, because you thought I felt I had my own bosses, obviously, and the executive leadership team. I had the councillors. They were kind of my bosses too.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also had the community. They were, because ultimately the council only exists for the community it serves.
That's right.
And so, you know, I was constantly sort of, you're sort of in the space where you're serving all three. But in some ways, you know, if you're not there for yourself, I think you at least can listen to all three.
Mm.
And you sort of realize, oh, there's actually a really important role here, because you can only control so much of what happens. But if you can get voices heard, and everybody's voice is valid if you're a councillor or you're on the executive team or you're in the community. But that, it's almost, there's sort of a bit of a mediation role. But I think, you know, when you become a, it takes a bit of courage sometimes too to really connect with the community. And I think to be effective at those roles, you do have to push back up a lot.
Mm.
And my experience, I was really lucky, because for most of that time I had a really good manager I was reporting to, and she literally said to me when I became manager, I knew nothing about community development. I want you to be my community development expert. And I went, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I better learn something about community development then.
Yeah.
Because that's a big ask. But she was amazing, and it enabled me to really, you know, connect with my team and the community and sort of try and hear them, and in the best way I could, to try and say, oh, where are the opportunities here?
Mm.
And feed those back up into the organisation. Mm. Who were, to be honest, at that time, we're pretty open to it. It was pretty good.
Is it still a strong team? Is it still a good sized team in council?
It's changed a lot. It's called a community partnerships team now. So there's still some amazing people in it. It's much smaller. But it's like all of these things, they go through journeys.
You know,
and I know when I left, I thought, oh, you know, I had my own reasons, but I also thought it's a sort of role that you need to always bring energy to, which is not always easy.
Yeah.
And I could feel myself getting a bit tired, a bit fatigued.
Yeah.
And so there were some other things going on with the restructure and stuff that were part of me leaving. But I also knew in my heart, I thought, actually, it's probably time to hand it over anyway.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, I've had this mantra for myself. As, you know, as soon as I know I'm the expert, especially in community, it's time to check out.
Yeah.
Because I stopped listening then. And that's the only way
we thinking
anything.
You might know better.
That's
the problem. That's right. I ran a community house for about 8 years and got to a point where, I had concerns that I had too much ownership of what was happening.
Yeah.
And then went, this isn't healthy for a community. And actually, there was quite a bit of pushback, quite a bit of anger in me leaving.
Yeah, there would be. I know. But I think whether it's wisdom or not, I don't know. But, you know, the reality is, if it's actually much easier when you recognise it before anybody else does.
Yes.
It's worse when it's two or three years later.
And people going,
and everybody else has been saying it for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's kinder to yourself if you can see it coming.
Yeah, that is true. Did you leave that role with another one to go to?
Yeah, I left without a job as well.
Wow.
I actually travelled for 6 months. I'd wisely saved some money before I left. I kind of had a bit of a plan probably 6 months before I left, that I felt like I was going to leave. I wasn't sure exactly when. And so I put a bit of money aside, and me and my new wife at that stage, we travelled for 6 months, went right around the world, which was
brilliant.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And surprisingly tiring.
Yeah. Travel is, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Travel's really important, though, eh? It does open your eyes to really different ways of being.
And it does.
And I'm sure gave you a whole lot of new experiences and knowledge to bring to the table in your next roles.
Yeah, I guess it just gives you a perspective, if nothing else. I think, it's so easy to get caught up in what our society, Western society, New Zealand society, whatever it is. It's just normal and easy to get caught up in all of the stuff that is here. And a lot of that's driven by consumerism and all that stuff, and we all know about it. But it's good to be able to travel to other places. And to be honest, we did it pretty cheap because my wife likes to be thrifty. And but that's all part of it. It's all part of the learning.
Yeah.
And I think, because I guess for me, you need to keep your humility. It's really important. And anything that enables me to do that, anything that creates a humbling experience, and travel does that, unless you're staying in flash hotels and stuff. But,
yeah. You
know, we went to Cambodia, we went to Vietnam, we went to, I don't know, we just went to so many places. And you pretty quickly realize that I know I'm going to complain about things, but, you know, I just need to make sure I spend my life appreciating what I've got. Not feeling guilty about it, but acknowledging, you know.
And recognizing that privilege.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Because if I don't, I do a disservice to myself and others.
Yeah. Good time to take a quick break. We're going to listen to Naked Eyes, always something there to remind me. This is showing your and my age, Lita.
Yeah, well, I'll try not to sing along.
Classic 80s tune there. Neither Lita nor I had ever heard of the actual artist, but knew the song well.
Yep.
Love that.
Like so many one-hit wonders from the 80s.
There wasn't there. We're going to turn back, though. We're going to turn back to mentoring, which is the whole reason you're here. We've been having a conversation about mentoring.
Yep.
Very much hoping to bring this program for the not-for-profit sector to the Waikato.
Yep.
We work in the space of community and social services, but we've got lots of other sort of charities and not-for-profit organisations like in the arts and in sports, you know, across the country doing this. Do you guys engage or do your mentors engage with other kinds of not-for-profits, or are you largely in social service community provision?
There's four programs around the country. Two of them are essentially aimed just broadly, generally, at not-for-profits. So whoever walks in the door, generally, it's about, once we sort of get them on the program, it is about finding a mentor that meets the needs of their leadership context. So it doesn't really matter.
Yes.
But our Auckland program is mentoring in the arts program. So that is wholly and solely aimed at artists or people working within the arts. So there's people who are running galleries, there's people who are artists who are trying to, you know, achieve some amazing things. And we've got a program in Whanganui, which is a social enterprise mentoring program. Yeah, so I guess part of the model too is that we partner with different organizations, and our role is to help bring the mentoring to their space, but it could be to their sector, or so if it came here, it would be connecting with you guys at Community Waikato and just sort of saying, you know, what are the priorities here? How does, could this program work best for you? And that's why, you know, we need the partnership approach.
And I suppose in a context like the Waikato, we've got sister organisations, Sport Waikato and Creative Waikato. So, I mean, there'd even be potential here for us to take leadership in that, but to actually partner with those organisations too, to put it out through their networks as well, so we could actually still blanket, you know, the whole spectrum of not-for-profits.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in time, you know, it could sort of, you know, trying to build it in a way that could slowly sort of expand and create more of those powerful connections.
Yeah.
Because it's so important that the, you know, the mentoring match is really the key.
Yes.
You know, we provide support around that match, but having people who can understand what the kaupapa of the program is, and find the mentors that also understand that, is really, really important. So there's no reason why any program couldn't just meet any need, whether you're in the sports sector or the arts sector. But at the same time, there is some sense too, as if you can create an interest from a specific, particular, you know, if it's Sport Waikato or, you know, any particular sector, you could run a bespoke program that really sort of delivers well to them, because each sector obviously has things that could work better for them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So tell me, you know, you guys have been operating for around 2 years now. You do a lot of the support, for this program to roll out in all these places.
Yeah, so we have coordinators who run them, who run the programs locally.
Yeah,
And we support the coordinators, and we support, obviously, the setup of the program.
Yeah.
And we have resources and a structure of running the program, which we're continually trying to improve.
But you've also done a lot of work to grab the stories of the impact that these mentoring relationships are having as well.
Yeah, we're continually trying to do that better, to be honest, because that's really important. And for anybody working in the not-for-profit sector, we all know the challenge of evaluating the impact of what we're doing. So, you know, we do have quite a lot of stories. We have some written down. This year we're trying to capture some more.
Off the top of your head, do you recall any that you might like?
There's one currently going that, and these are little things, but they have a big impact.
Yeah.
There's one in Taranaki, and I know, because I don't necessarily have the permission to share too much of it, so I'll be a little bit
vague.
Yeah, a little bit vague. But essentially, the person, you know, is working in a not for profit, and it's a difficult kind of environment. They've got, obviously, they're like in a chief executive, general manager sort of role. So they have people working under them, but they obviously lead their board as well. And are quite isolated, and they've come on the program. And one of the things they've done, which was really amazing, by about the second meeting, they were essentially started to connect with other people in Taranaki who ran really similar organizations, and created their own peer mentoring in that leadership space. But then they also started to make other connections for people working for them to get peer networking across the sector in South Taranaki. And, you know, that person has just done, you know, amazing things, and they're just going to start driving it forward, so that, you know, they've blossomed really quickly into you know, doing what we do in their own context really powerfully. That leaves a sustainable kind of impact.
Hugely powerfully. And that, I think, you know, really demonstrates too, you know, when you, right at the beginning, you talked about what this mentoring is, and you talked about community leadership And that's a beautiful example of someone embracing that leadership role.
And there was another really cool story from up in the Bay of Plenty last year, and it where they matched someone who was, I don't know all the details, I can't remember, I heard it like a year ago. But essentially they matched someone who was Māori, working within the Māori space, and someone who was an American living in New Zealand who kind of had more of a, I don't know, very structured engineering kind of brain. And there was some concern about, oh, is this a good match or this is not match, but the person had the skills. So they had a lot of conversations around, you know, making them both aware of what the connection was going to be. And they pretty much fell in love with each other. Because it was like a match made in heaven. They both went in with an open mind to hear each other, and they listened. And the mentor has just got so much richness from connecting with things that are kaupapa Māori, and you know, the impact in his bicultural understanding has been huge. And he just loves the connection that, you know, he got. And the Māori woman who's in her space got, you know, a lot of the expertise that he offered. And it was just such a rich connection that was really powerful. That we couldn't have even predicted, and you might have even almost avoided it. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And that's the power of supporting and connecting with them sort of externally, just to make sure it's going okay and helping manage some of that transition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember hearing that story too.
Yeah, you were at that meeting.
Yeah, I was. And I felt the same way. I thought that was just such an awesome story, and what an outcome.
And you know, just the power of diversity, the importance to make sure we're connecting with people who are different to us.
Yeah.
Because it's easy just to be with those who make you feel normal and comfortable.
Yes, yeah. And echo chambers aren't necessarily healthy, eh?
Generally not.
Hey, look, it's been great chatting to you. We're actually pretty close to the end of our time.
Yep.
Yeah. I have really appreciated this. And we, like I say, in Community Waikato, we're really keen to partner with you in this as well, and bring this program here.
And we'd love to.
Those of you who are listening, if you're thinking, you know, this is something I'd really like to be involved in, either as a mentor, if you're leading an organization and you have confidence in the skills that you've got, or if you're an organization that thinks you're an individual of an organization that feels that you've got some growth, some learning you'd like to do, should that be around a specific thing or just broadly?
No, honestly, we tend to shoulder chat mentors because it's much easier when we know who the
mentee is. Who you're looking for,
And it's much easier for them to commit when they really understand.
Yeah.
Having said that, you know, we do have some others who have self-selected too and make good mentors. I think the thing, you know, almost everyone we shoulder tap sort of looks at us and says, well, what do I have to offer? So I think don't let that feeling stop you. Because, and you know, I've just attended your conference here, and it was about storytelling. And one of the things that's really dear to my heart, which I really heard there, was the power of who we are.
Yeah.
And everybody's story is powerful. And this is about not you being an expert on something. This is about a skill gap, or even an experience gap, really. And everybody's got an experience. And the role we play, and what we try and play with the mentoring partner, is how do we find that the people with the right experience to share their experience with others.
Yes.
So everybody has something to offer. So it is a privilege to be asked as a mentor, but honestly, it's, you get asked because you've got something to offer. And if you've got nothing to offer, then maybe you should actually just start asking questions about it, because you might be the perfect person.
Yeah.
And I guess really quickly, part of the kaupapa of this is that humility and bringing that, because it's about you sharing you with somebody else to make them become a more amazing version of themselves. And
perfect.
So bringing that in is part of what makes this work.
It sounds perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Lee.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Same.
You've been listening to Connect with Community Waikato, Free FM 89.0.
For more episodes of this Community Access Radio show, please visit freefm.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast possible by funding the Access Internet Radio Project.